And welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto and the GTA. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Sue doing the news and friend Todd in the studio today. Thanks, Lamia, for checking, as always. And I wanted to just say a shout-out to my friend Rob and Denver, who are listening on the West Coast right now. So I miss you both. We have a really full program today. We're going to be speaking with vegan athletes, and this is something that maybe some people out there would see as a bit of a paradox. I think that there's definitely still the image that if you're a vegan, so someone who doesn't eat any animal products, that you must be very pasty and weak. So I was thinking about what we could do on this show to help dispel that myth. I have a lot of friends who do athletic stuff, couriers, who are working out all day and who eat a vegan diet. A friend of mine just ran his second marathon. He's been vegan for a while, as well as friends who do Bagua, Aikido, and various other martial arts who are vegan as well. But today we're going to be talking with somebody who thought it would be cool to get a marketing agency going that would just address the concerns of vegan athletes. That's Ben Mader. And then we're also going to be speaking with Brendan Fraser, who is an ultramarathoner and a triathlete. He's quite a famous Canadian vegan athlete. So we're going to do all that today on the program, but first let's hear from Sue some news.
Thanks, Lauren. Just going back to some memories to start off with. I remember when I was in Girl Guides as a child, learning many practical things to get badges for my sash, things like baking, craft, sewing. We won't even get into the fact that these days Automotive 101 would have had a much more lasting effect than learning how to build a birdhouse. But anyways, Girl Scouts in Fairbanks, Alaska are learning really nifty things, like how to trap and skin beavers. Yes, Troop 34 are killing beavers as part of a state flood management program. Last spring, about 10 members of the troop and their families helped to catch two beavers using snare and lethal traps. The girls were taught how to find the animals' dens, how to lay the traps, and then how to skin them. Stephanie Boyles of PETA says, "We think it sends a very, very bad message that when animals cause a problem, you kill them. The Girl Scouts should want girls to become stewards of wildlife, not abusers." The girls had the pelts tanned, and the troop plans to make hats and mittens once a dozen hides are collected. They plan to begin setting out traps again this month. In a letter to PETA, spokeswoman Courtney Shore said that the organization does not promote trapping or hunting, and that the troop participated after an invitation from the State Department of Fish and Game. And, well, no merit badges are awarded for killing animals inhumanely. Troop leader Donna Boylan said she wanted to impart lessons in responsible game management to the members. Trapping may not be pretty, but the girls understand the seriousness and huge responsibility of taking a life. They understand that when humans impact their environment, they become ultimately responsible for maintaining a healthy population of the animals they have to coexist with in these urban centers. Strange. Humans are impacting on their environment and then become responsible for maintaining the healthy population that these animals have been doing fine controlling on their own before humans ever intervened. On a good note, Vancouver resident Nicholas Reed is being recognized by PETA for his outstanding achievement in writing a children's book that inspires young readers with strong feelings of empathy and compassion. He's been awarded with their first ever Proggy Award in the category of Best Children's Book. Proggy Awards are presented to animal-friendly individuals, companies, and organizations. Saving Emily is the touching story of a cow raised for slaughter and a boy who cares about her. As the author describes the plight of the cow and the effect on the boy, children learn about the confinement, abuse, separation from family, and other hardships endured by animals raised for food. The tale is written from the points of view of both Emily the cow and Chris the boy. And it not only persuades readers to empathize with animals, but also imparts to them a feeling of pride for wanting to stand up for Emily. It's an excellent book if you haven't read it yet, so definitely pick it up. Especially with the holiday season around the corner, it would be a great book to give to any kids on your list. And on a sad note, Dr. Donald R. Griffin, who is considered the founder of the modern field of study of animal thinking and consciousness, died last Friday in Lexington, Massachusetts. He was 88. In 1978, Dr. Griffin broke a scientific taboo by suggesting that animals might have the capacity to think and reason. This field is now known as cognitive ethology. "He started a revolution in the way we see animals," said Dr. Marion Stamp Dawkins, an animal behaviorist at Oxford University. "People have been saying we shouldn't study animals' minds or animal consciousness, but only things we can observe. He said that this is a legitimate question. He really opened the door." So sad goodbye to Dr. Griffin, but many thanks to all the wonderful work he did while here. And in the news now is Buckeye Farms once again. If anyone remembers, in October 2000, they were in the farm after a tornado went through, and there ended up being millions of chickens killed. Now, as many as 14 million chickens were scheduled to start being slaughtered last Thursday after the state of Ohio ordered the farm to begin shutting its barns. With the barns going, the chickens inside are going as well, and that's some 350,000 a week. Killing's going to continue until the company either empties its 120 barns, wins an appeal of the state order to close, or a new owner takes over, whichever comes first. And according to the Humane Society of the United States, this is a human-made disaster. We want this to be done in the most humane manner possible. With so many chickens and such a tight timeline, many activists worry that they will face death by cruel and inhumane methods. I think they'll be forced to bulldoze and bury them alive, said Case Mel of Omni Farm Animal Sanctuary, which has twice rescued hens from Buckeye. Matt Doyle, chief financial officer for Buckeye, has denied published reports that Buckeye would bury the chickens alive. Just to finish off, I watched Legally Blonde 2 last night and couldn't help but see the irony at the end of the movie. Anyone who hasn't seen it yet, our heroine, Elle Woods, played by Reese Witherspoon, is a lawyer who heads to Washington after finding out her beloved dog, Bruiser, his mother, is in a research lab. So she sets out to get a bill passed to free all lab animals. That's just the gist of it. Of course, with it being a Hollywood Mary Poppins type of film, our heroine overcomes all, the bill's passed, and we get to see all the lab animals running free out of their prison doors. What I found ironic is at the end of the film, as we watch all these happy animals running for freedom, one of the characters in the movie is seen eating a hot dog and looking quite happy as she munches on it.
It's a veggie dog.
I don't think so. Okay. So I guess that what it tells us is that you're a cute little fluffy animal, you deserve to be free. However, if you're not so small and fluffy, then it's okay to eat you. Farm animals are one of the most abused animals out there. Not ever to dismiss the abuse and suffering other animals go through, but according to the Canadian Council on Animal Care, almost 2 million animals are used for research each year. 650 million farm animals are sent to slaughter each year. That adds up to about 1.5 million animals a day being sent to slaughter. Nowadays, more and more people abhor the use of products tested on animals. But do they even bother looking at the ingredients listed on their bottle of shampoo? Many of the ingredients come from other animals, called animal byproducts. Keratin, for instance, is found in hair rinses, shampoos, permanent wave solution, and it's a protein that comes from the ground-up horns, hooves, feathers, quills, and hair of various animals. Lanolin is a product of the oil glands of sheep extracted from their wool. And, of course, there are many, many more. And while you may not want to be buying into the research industry, you are still contributing to the suffering of millions of other animals who are without a voice. Yes, every little action you do that you take to promote compassion helps end suffering. Just try to be more aware of how there are many other ways you can help. And with so many all-natural products on the market these days, there's no reason why any creature has to suffer for the sake of cleanliness or vanity.
Thanks, Sue. Today's show is focusing on vegan athletes. Our first guest is Ben Mader, and he is the founder of Earthways, a Portland-based media and social marketing agency that provides services for progressive businesses and non-for-profit organizations. Mader brings a unique perspective to his field with the ability to combine successful marketing strategies with creative and technical media services such as graphic and website design, allowing him the ability to conceptualize and implement projects from one desktop. With a BA in marketing management from the University of New Mexico, Mader has consulted numerous companies and nonprofit organizations to establish successful online ventures. Currently, Ben is making a career shift to focus on spearheading several nonprofit organizations, including veganathlete.com. That's what we're going to be speaking with him about today. Veganathlete.com is a website and organization that is dedicated to providing professional and amateur athletes with information and support to achieve their body's full potential with a vegan diet. So we're going to come back with Ben Mader, and then we're also going to speak with Brendan Brazier, who is a triathlete and an ultramarathoner as well as a vegan. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5. Ben, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. Thanks for being on the program today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, so let's start off by talking about your vision for veganathlete.com. I gave the background about who you are and sort of the place that you're coming from, but I'm curious about how you and why you decided to start this website up and what purpose it's going to serve.
Well, the focus of Vegan Athlete is to simply meet the growing need for a lot of athletes, both professional and amateur, who are looking for information on vegan diet. It's been a fast-growing trend well before we started the website, just only a few months ago, really. And there's been discussion forums about it, and it's been a trend going back, goodness, well over 20 years, when you have like ex-NBA players like Robert Parrish and Bill Walton, who were going vegetarian at the time, and athletes have been kind of trying on their own different ways of changing their diet to improve athletic performance. But what vegan athletes focuses is that if you're really sincere about achieving your body's full potential, the way to do it is with a vegan diet, because it's the analogy that I heard best is that even if you're just getting a little bit of cheese or milk in your diet, it has the health consequences of liquid meat, more or less. And as athletes where their bodies are their careers, and it's also another analogy of having a little bit of water in your gas tank. And do you want to be sputtering along, or do you want to run on peak performance? And that's what vegan athletes is about.
I was saying to Sue when we were waiting to get you on the line that we've done past shows on vegan nutrition before, and I think that when people are first being introduced to veganism, and maybe who hadn't been vegetarian before, they think, how are you going to survive? There's even just that initial, initial response of how do you even subsist, let alone thrive? And so it's interesting that this website is out there that's saying not only can you live not eating animal products, but you can actually thrive doing so. So I think that it really helps to dispel some myths.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and you just look at the athletes who are doing it. Carl Lewis, for example. Ben Johnson, the list goes on and on of very high-end athletes who are excelling at what they're doing. Doing the transition to a vegan diet has become really easy nowadays. Maybe five, six, some years ago, it could have been a little bit more of a challenge, but today when you can walk into just about any mainstream grocery store and run into Garden Burger or Boca Burger as far as some, more fast food type of items to pick up, or even driving through Burger King nowadays, you can get a pretty much a vegan veggie burger that tastes pretty darn good.
So when people go to www.veganathlete.com, I know you're still sort of in the initial stages, but what types of services or information are you hoping to provide to people?
Yes, well, the website and the project as itself is really just in its first stages of development. For the online form of veganathlete.com, what we're going to do is we're going to providing a form where people can go in, and we'll have a discussion form that will be up shortly as far as athletes who can chat amongst themselves and talk about different diet ideas that they have and exchange recipes. As an organization, what we're going to be doing is conducting outreach in a very targeted focus audience of professional and amateur athletes. So we're going to be setting up consultation sessions with teams or individuals, and one of the things that's going to be one of my favorite programs is the food table sessions, where we're going to be sponsoring entire vegan buffets that athletes or entire teams can come in and sample all these foods. And because really what we believe is that, the food is just fantastic. A vegan diet today is just dynamite. There's no getting around it. It's easy to do. It tastes great, and it's affordable. And so what we'd like to do is kind of give athletes like a 3-week challenge, because after about 3 weeks of going on a healthy, balanced vegan diet, which is, again, easy to do, delicious, that your body's going to start to pick up on this. And after 3 weeks, people have told me that, I did it, and first thing I did was I went out and had a steak to celebrate, and they get sick. And they start to realize, when you start paying attention to your body, or you start getting to that peak level of performance that your body's starting to go through, why go back? Why go back? And for so many people, their sport is their life. And this information is really needed in the community for the sport community in general. And another reason why this is an important project is that from a marketing standpoint, trying to get the information about vegan diet out there, when you're looking at different groups to outreach, the professional athletes today are very much opinion leaders, whether we like it or not. And by having some of these high-profile athletes come out and maybe make a stand against all the Burger King and McDonald's sponsorship, that's going to have a huge effect, well beyond even just the professional range, but so many people who are involved in marathons or whatever their fitness activity is, even musicians, I would say, and people who are in construction worker jobs, whatever it may be. When your life depends on your body's performance, you're going to want to be a vegan athlete, and all it takes is about a 3-week challenge, and we can pretty much guarantee it's an easy sell from there.
When we talked on the phone yesterday, you were preparing, I think, a lunch. You were frying up some tofu, and we were talking about people rolling their eyes a little bit. And I'm curious about your initial conversations with people who haven't been vegan, who are athletes, about this project, about your vision for this project. Have people been generally quite skeptical? And if so, what are their concerns at this point?
Well, you know, a lot of people come up to me, or when we're talking, they've been looking for this kind of information, and that's what's really spurred this on more than anything. That's just random people who are involved in snowboarding or, you know, whatever their kind of sport or thing that they like to do. Was that, you know, well, I've been wanting to do this because, you know, the word has been starting to get out there, kind of at a grassroots level. As far as, well, you know, of course, just about everyone initially who hasn't sampled some vegan delicacies have, you know, said, well, oh, what do you just eat? You know, like grains and salad all day and
lentils. People have the lentil stereotype. It's like, oh, you must be eating a lot of lentils.
Yes, which can be great, you know, when you know how to cook them. But again, today it's like it's so easy to. You can be a fast food vegan athlete and still eat pretty healthy. Now, of course, you know, it's all about very much common sense guidelines here. You need to get, you know, your fruits and veggies and, you know, have a well-balanced diet. But there's so many delicious foods out there, and even mainstream grocery stores, not including all the growing natural food chains that are starting to really pick up throughout the country. But you can just walk in and, you know, pick up some really good food to go, and or, you know, easy to prepare veggie burgers and you know, tofu again is you know, some people kind of like, well, you know, it's gross. It's just this white, chalky kind of food, but you know, what we're going to be doing is our food seminars is, you know, here's just a few easy spices, you know, a little bit of turmeric and cumin and some bregs, and you can fry it up and throw in a few different veggies in there, and you've got a great stir fry that's just full of protein. That's the big issue that everyone's like, well, wait a minute, what about meat? You got to get your meat to get your protein, and it's kind of it's silly because, you know, for people who know you're getting all this animal protein that does nothing but perhaps weaken your immune system or lead to osteoporosis, and what kind of athlete wants osteoporosis?
But what about all those tasty antibiotics that are added?
Yes, it's not going to help you out when you're, you know, out there performing on the track or field.
So they're concerned about protein.
Oh, yes, that's the number one issue that comes up right away. And it's so easy to get plenty of protein. And a lot of people associate, well, I'm going to be getting a lot of protein, you know, because I want to be a bodybuilder and be strong. And that really has very little to do with it. You know, if you want to be strong and have a healthy, strong body, you need to exercise. You need to lift heavy weights. And, you know, like there's Bill Mantegna is, you know, a champion weightlifter. And there's a growing list of high-end athletes like Dave Scott, for example, Ironman triathlon winner who did it three times. So
What about women athletes out there? Would you say women are picking this up to the same degree that men are?
Yes, I would say I really haven't seen too much difference at all in that. The only issue that we've somewhat come out identified right off the bat for women is with tofu is that because of the estrogen effect that eating a lot of soy products can have, that you want to moderate your intake of soybeans or tofu in particular. But
yeah, we'll be talking hopefully with Brendan about that issue as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, he'll be an expert on that.
Yeah. So yeah, it seems like another concern that hopefully we'll be touching on later in the hour is around calcium and people being concerned that their bones will be weak if they're not consuming milk. I know this year I ended up breaking a bone in my foot, and I asked the nurse if there was anything I could do to speed the healing up, and she said, well, it will only be a problem if you don't drink any milk, and then she laughed as if that would be completely absurd, and then I laughed too and then thought, well, you know, we'll see how this goes, you know, and I ended up luckily healing very quickly, consuming no milk products at all. But it seems like that would be a concern, you know, with bones and things like that.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the nutritional research is out there that, you know, if you're going to be consuming a lot of animal proteins, that's going to throw off your pH levels and your blood levels, and you're going to start losing calcium out of your bloodstream. So it's kind of, it's that fallacy is only going to be around for a few years more because the truth is out there. And as more of the vegan athletes start coming forward and using vegan athletes, that's kind of like a central resource to kind of help, you know, go through these kind of mysterious transitional phases that they may not be quite sure of. But you know, it's a given. Once you anyone can experiment on their own, and you know, when you're really in tune with your body, a vegan diet is really a no-brainer.
Ben, we only have a few more minutes left before we go to the interview with Brendan. I'm just wondering if you have any last words, or if you want to give people some information about how they can find out more information about veganathlete.com.
Yes, well, the things are just now in their first stages of development. We'll be beginning outreach and some PR programs at the beginning next year. The website is veganathlete.com. And you can check out a few of our links on there and kind of get an idea for where we're going. And if you are a vegan athlete, please stay in touch and send us an email. And the whole idea here is to create an association that we can all be involved in, because, you know, clearly, you know, everyone has a vested interest in seeing this marketplace grow. You know, more veggie products, the cheaper they are for all of us, and the better they are.
Okay, great. Thanks for being on the program today. I look forward to seeing the development of the website and the organization in the future.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. We were just speaking with Ben Mader, who is the mastermind behind veganathlete.com, which is an organization that's trying to get vegan athletes to dialogue with each other and to share information. Now we're going to be turning to an interview with Brendan Razor, which I'm really excited about. I'd like to move into some more detailed information about what it means to be a vegan athlete. Brendan Razor is a professional triathlete from North Vancouver and the 2003 50K Ultra Marathon National Champion. It just sounds amazing even to say that. So I'm really glad he's going to be on the show today. Brendan, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thanks a lot for being on the show.
You're welcome.
So I read through some articles that you've written about being a vegan athlete, and I wanted to start off just with maybe knocking down or at least addressing some of the concerns that people might have as they're moving towards a vegan diet. But before that, I just wanted to give you a chance to give a bit of a bio on yourself, maybe including, you know, how long you've been vegan for and the types of athletics that you're involved with.
Sure. I've been vegan for about 4 years. And vegetarian for about 13. And yeah, I do all kinds of endurance activities, mostly biking, running, and a bit of swimming with the triathlon. And marathons and Ironman triathlon is my main focus for the next few years anyways. That's a 3.8 kilometer swim, 180K bike, and a marathon, which is 42 kilometers. So that's my main focus for the next few years anyways.
Wow. It's exciting. It was really amazing to look at your website. I was saying to Ben at the first part of the program that I think a lot of people think about veganism in terms of how can you even live not eating animal products, but it's amazing to see how people can thrive too. I mean, I have a lot of friends who are vegans who are definitely thriving individuals, and it's great to see somebody reach such a top level in their athletic performance as well, such as you have. Are people sometimes surprised that you're vegan?
Oh yeah, always. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of people don't even know I am, just sort of in my circle of friends. My long time friends know, but some friends I've just met in the last few years I don't think even really know. It's not something I even really talk about with them too much, but it's definitely being able to thrive on it is quite rare, because I think a lot of people go about it the wrong way, and I hear so many people say that they like to be vegetarian or vegan, but they can't because they're athletic, and that's just such a common misconception.
So how do you go about addressing that misconception? What do you usually say to people?
Well, it's balancing things out properly. I know when I first became a vegetarian, I was in grade 10 in high school, and I would just eat so much pasta and so...
Starchitarian.
Vegetables, pardon?
Yeah, people sometimes refer to that jokingly as a starchitarian.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And that's what it became. It was just, I was hardly eating any fat, not much protein at all, and I was always hungry. My energy levels weren't too bad, but I just had to eat so much, and it was impractical. And then I started doing more research and finding out that it's really important to eat protein at every meal when you're really active, and just getting the right kinds of fats as well, like from hemp seed oil and flaxseed oil and olive oil. And it seems strange at first. You have to add fat to food when you're vegan, and a lot of people have a hard time getting their head around that. It just, especially if they want to lose weight, they just think, how can you add fat to food? It just doesn't seem to make sense. But what they don't realize is you're still eating a lower fat diet than if you ate a regular conventional diet, I guess we'll call it, with all the cheese and the meat and all the hidden fat that's in that. It really is hidden. Like, you just don't know it. And for example, milk, they call it 2% milk, but it's measured differently to most other products. So in reality, it's actually in the 30% range. So yeah, when you stop drinking milk and eating cheese, your fat, dietary fat goes way down, and yeah, it's important to supplement it.
I was wondering if you could give us a day in the life of you and the types of activities that you do, as well as exactly the types of foods that you're consuming, just to give people a more concrete idea about what a vegan diet would look like for an athlete.
Sure. Well, most mornings when I'm training a lot in the summer leading up to some bigger races, I'll swim in the morning and then get back from there. It's usually about a 4K, 4.5K swim, and then I find one of the best breakfasts is just oatmeal. It's really simple. It digests easy. There's lots of good complex carbohydrates and fiber, and I usually mix some soy protein with water and put that on in place of soy milk, just because there's more protein in it. And then I'll mix some flaxseed oil or hemp seed oil in with that, and just some fruit, and that's just a really good basic breakfast, really easy to prepare. Then I'll bike for either anywhere between 4 to 6 hours, and then run about an hour and a quarter after that. So there's a big gap in there with not being able to eat a lot after breakfast, but I take meal replacements with me on the bike, which is just a really easily digestible source of energy that's balanced. It's got the fat and carbohydrate. And then, yeah, for dinner I'll have, usually I get into a bit of a rut sometimes, but it's such a good meal. It's just vegetable stir-fried with tofu. Yeah, I get all the vitamins and nutrients with the vegetables, and then the tofu, of course, is easy to digest and a great source of protein.
So this easy-to-digest stuff seems to be very important. I guess you want these nutrients and the waste to be moving through you as quickly as possible. Is that the idea, or you just don't want your body to be expending energy digesting food when it should be, you know, building muscle and other types of things?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Anything you can do to make your body's job easier is so important when you're putting a lot of stress on it, such as training a lot. So, yeah, if you can make the digestion process easier, your body will be happier and will perform better, because it will recover better, and your immune system will be stronger as well. And that's, I know even many non-vegetarian athletes now who have started adding tofu to their diet, because it does digest so easily, and the night before a race or after, when your body's trying to recover, give it some good quality protein that's not just going to sit in the stomach like most meat does.
So do you have different protein sources that you'll eat after you've done a race in terms of recovery, or is the diet sort of similar then before and after?
I haven't noticed a lot of difference. I've experimented with really adding a lot more carbohydrate before races and more protein after, but I haven't really noticed anything. My diet's pretty steady, just balanced all around.
We've heard a lot about tofu on the show today, and that's the T word is kind of scary to a lot of people. I love it, but I've been vegan for quite a while now, and had tofu in a lot of different ways. Also, the person Todd, who's in the studio right now, makes his own tempeh, and sort of maybe a bit of a tempeh-aholic. But there's lots of different types of protein out there, and I think that's probably the primary concern for a lot of vegan athletes, or people who are considering going vegan in general, let alone becoming a vegan athlete. Can you talk about maybe different protein sources, if people maybe are shy of tofu or concerned about having too much soy in their diet?
Yeah, that's a good point, because there has been quite a bit about people eating too much soy recently, and I don't know if there's much truth to that or not, but I think logic just tells that it's good to mix up the sources of protein. It's just a sensible thing to do. So, yeah, I eat lots of different types of beans and lentils, and there's just so many different types out there. Every time I buy stuff at the grocery store, the checkout person will always ask, what do you do with this, and how do you cook that? And it's just so many almost undiscovered things. Just the variety of beans is pretty huge. And, you know, when most people think of beans, they think of refried beans, just kind of mush, and it's not too appetizing. But, yeah, there's so many choices out there. And even most supermarkets now have a natural food section, and you can really get a great variety and mix it with, just have them plain or have them with rice. There's so many good recipes out there as well.
To me, this sounds very tasty, but I'm imagining the average listener saying, Bob, you know, lentils and rice is something I always go back to. Do you have favorite recipe books that you could recommend that it wouldn't just be combining lentils and rice, that there's like a whole world of flavor and excitement out there for people who are interested in adopting a vegan diet? I know that I read that you were actually in the process of doing your own cookbook right now, but I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that and also some of your favorite cookbooks that you use.
Sure. Yeah, I'm writing a book right now. I hope to have it done by the end of the year and hopefully available by early next year, or at least sometime in the spring next year. But yeah, it's mostly for active people who are busy and want to be able to cook food fast. And of course, it's all vegan, and people will just be able to buy it and know that all the recipes they make are balanced, and they don't have to be second-guessing everything, and they know that they will get all the nutrients they need. That was my motivation for that, just getting something out there that I haven't seen anything like that. So far, for recipes, what I do, I just make them up, really. I don't have any favorite cookbooks. I just experiment and keep notes and remember what I like and forget what I don't like, so... Yeah, I can't really recommend any books that are out there right now.
One of my friend's favorite right now is The Voluptuous Vegan. She swears by that one as being quite amazing. I think for people, too, who are first transitioning to a vegan diet and who really miss cheese, there's the Uncheese Cookbook, which is very good. And then two really famous books that are making a lot of waves in North America right now is How It All Vegan and The Garden of Vegan, which is sort of fun, kind of hip, easy to prepare vegan food put together by a couple of really nice ladies out on the West Coast in Canada. So those are some suggestions as well if people are sort of feeling like they don't know where to start. Could we talk a little bit about calcium? That seems to be another primary concern for people as well. What do you suggest for people who are looking for alternative sources of calcium?
Well, personally, I eat a lot of sesame seeds. I grind them up with flax seeds usually, and I've just gotten the habit of putting those on lots of different things, on salads or on cereal, and they're very high in calcium. That's my main source of calcium, and yeah, calcium is so important, especially for athletes, because it's not just used for bone growth, as most people know, but it's also used for muscle contraction. So when you're running or biking or really active, calcium is key to prevent cramping, as well as another big thing. So yeah, and I also, what I found is really good is to grind up the sesame seeds in a coffee grinder and make it into a flour and substitute that in other recipes. If you make brownies or even bread or cakes or anything that would use flour, you can substitute some of it for sesame seed flour, and that's a really good way just to load up on it.
Do you find there's any foods that you eat, vegan foods that you particularly avoid because you find that they're not good for your performance or you just don't feel healthy eating them?
There's not anything really specific. Yeah, once in a while, you know, if it doesn't have any animal products, I'll pretty much eat anything at
right.
some point. There's nothing I really avoid, but when I'm training at my peak, I try and keep a pretty simple diet, really.
You just find that things move through you a little bit easier that way?
Yeah, and then I know exactly what's in it. So if I was to eat at a restaurant, I might not know all the details of what's in it, and then I might have somewhat of a bad reaction if I'm really stressing my body the following day.
I wanted to ask a question, too, about bulk. I know with a lot of the guy friends that I have, sometimes people are concerned about going vegan because they're afraid that they're going to get really skinny, and they're not sure if you can keep muscle mass on while eating a vegan diet.
Oh, yeah, you can, though. It's, requirements are filled through all kinds of different beans and tofu and lots of different vegan proteins like that. It just comes down to making sure you get enough calories, and a lot of that then comes back to the fat and supplementing with fat, which does sound kind of funny, but yeah, making salad dressings and using flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil, olive oil in different types of cooking, and just getting used to adding it to things.
Mm-hmm. So there's lots of different sources out there.
Yeah.
Things you can add.
And avocados too, I should mention, are great. I know a few bodybuilders, non-vegan, but they do eat avocados quite often because they are such a great source of vitamins and fat.
For people who are interested in finding out more information about how you embarked on the vegan diet journey, or if they have questions or comments, I was looking at your website last night, and it's quite comprehensive, and I was wondering if you could just give that address now.
Sure. My website, it's brendanbrazier.com. That's BrendanBrazier. And I can be emailed at brendan@brendanbrazier.com.
Great. And there's a forum there, too, which for people to post questions to each other as well as to you to discuss some of the ins and outs of being a vegan athlete.
Yeah, that's right. If you would, you can just add a comment to the forum or ask a question for either myself or anyone else who might be looking at it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a good way as well to establish a bit of a network.
So now that you've modified your diet and you're no longer a starchitarian, do you find that you're not quite as hungry anymore? I know a lot of vegans who sort of, they eat on quite a regular basis and they're not doing ultra marathons. So how do you feel sort of on a regular basis? Do you feel hungry a lot?
No, not anymore. When I was a starchitarian, I actually wasn't hungry then because I just ate so much, but it was just taking up my whole day. It was just became ridiculous. So, yeah, now I just pretty much eat like a regular person. I've done sport long enough that my body has adapted to the amount of calories it needs, and it doesn't need as much as it used to.
Mm.
But, yeah, just eating throughout the day. I try not to eat huge meals. I just try and eat a whole bunch of small ones and just be prepared and just have things with me if I'm going out, or just really think ahead, I guess. And at first it's a bit of a bother. You think that it's, you know, you don't want to bother thinking ahead like that, but if you put in a good week or two just planning everything out and working out exactly your requirements and all that, then you've got it for the rest of your life. It's such a small investment to make, and the return is so good, and then you're just on autopilot after that, and you don't even think about it. So, yeah, it's well worth it.
Great. Brendan, thanks so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome.
It was a pleasure to speak with you. What's your next race?
Seattle Marathon in, I guess it's 12 days now.
Wow. Well, good luck.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5. If you have questions or comments for any of our guests or ideas for upcoming shows, do write us at animalvoices@ciut.fm. Thanks for listening.